For those of you visiting with us this morning, we started a series several months ago, actually, working our way through the book of 2 Corinthians, not doing a lesson every week, not every time that I speak, but just trying to work our way through this letter that is very often, I think, neglected in our study of the New Testament. And this is where we've gotten to. We're going to be in this text in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 in the lesson this morning. This is another one of those places where we have, I think, an unfortunate chapter division, because chapter 7 and verse 1, I think, very clearly is the conclusion to the things that Paul is saying in the paragraph that begins in chapter 6 and verse 14. So we want to think for a few minutes this morning about what this text teaches. I want to take just a moment to welcome, join with other brethren here in welcoming everyone, and especially those who are visiting this morning. An expression that has become very, very near and dear to my heart in recent years is some time ago a friend of mine told me that you can't make old friends. I have a number of old friends in the audience this morning from other places, and it's so good to see them and good to have them and their families with us this morning. Just appreciate that very much. Glad that they're here. Glad that all of us are here. This passage is well known. As a matter of fact, probably if there are parts of 2 Corinthians that most people would be familiar with, this would certainly be one of those. And primarily because of verse 14, where the Apostle Paul says, and this is the English Standard Translation, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers." Paul in this letter has been reminding the Corinthians about the work that he had done among them, the work that the apostles were doing in preaching and teaching God's word. He's trying to show them what it means to be a Christian. And so he gets here to chapter 6 and verse 14, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers." He's talking about that life that we live as Christians. And that's what we want to think about, especially for a few minutes in the lesson this morning. I looked at a lot of different translations of this. Unequally yoked, two words in the English Standard Version, and several others, actually translates just one Greek word. It's a Greek word that only appears in this verse in the New Testament. It does appear in the Septuagint translation of the Old Testament one time. The Septuagint translation, of course, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. In Leviticus chapter 19, when instructions are given about not yoking together two different kinds of animals, the Septuagint translators use the same word that Paul uses here. The New American Standard Update, Holman, Christian Standard Bible, New Revised Standard, render this, "Do not be mismatched with unbelievers." The 95 version of the New American Standard, "Do not be bound together with unbelievers." The Christian Standard Bible and the New English Translation, "Do not become partners with unbelievers." Just a quick sidebar there. Somebody asked me a question about NABU. And what the significance of that is. The Lockman Foundation published the New American Standard Bible originally in the mid-1970s, I think 75 or 77 is when the whole Bible came out. They completely revised it and updated it in 1995. If you've got a copy of the New American Standard Bible, it's almost certainly that 95 update. Well, the Lockman Foundation has updated it again, and they released a complete revision, Old and New Testament, in 2020. And so if you see the U, that's the 2020. 95, that's the one that most of us have. And you can see that the New American Standard translators made a little bit of a change. I like that top one. I like the idea of not being mismatched with unbelievers when we're trying to think about or come to an understanding of exactly what Paul has in mind in this text. Notice that he says also in verse 14, "For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness?" The word that's translated partnership here, not particularly a religious word. It's not the word fellowship. It's not the word koinonia, which we've talked about. As a matter of fact, not too long ago, we talked about The Greek word koinonia, which is most often translated fellowship, that word is in this text. Koinonia is in this text. But that's not the word that Paul uses here. He uses a word, just a common Greek word, that means joint participation toward a common goal. And so whatever it is that he's talking about when he says do not be unequally yoked, or don't be mismatched, or don't be bound to unbelievers, he's talking about something that would form a partnership. In other words, something that puts us in close proximity with someone who is not a believer. And clearly, in the New Testament, there are some partnerships that God frowns on. Some partnerships that we are to avoid as Christians. Some people, for example. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, when Paul is talking about the fact that the church at Corinth had someone among them, someone who was in their midst, someone who was present at their assemblies, who was part of their group, and is committing a grievous sin, something should have been done about it. That's what the whole chapter is about in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. But Paul says in verse 2, are you not arrogant? Ought you not rather to mourn? Let him who has done this be removed from you. Shouldn't be a partnership there. Shouldn't be a joint participation there toward a common goal. What would joint participation toward a common goal look like in a local church? It would be what we've done this morning, singing together, praying together, giving as we've been prospered, sharing the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. And so the wrong people sometimes are a partnership that we need to avoid. Not only that, but the wrong actions. In Acts chapter 15, beginning of Acts chapter 15, there's a question has arisen, controversy really has arisen in Antioch of Syria. And Paul was up there, he was preaching, Barnabas was up there, he was preaching, they were converting Gentiles. And some people came who said, we're members of the church at Jerusalem, and we have come to teach you that these Gentile converts need to convert to Judaism. And so Paul and Barnabas go to Jerusalem to find out what's going on. Acts chapter 24, we start wrapping this up. And we have this. Since we have heard, we have this letter that the church at Jerusalem will write. Since we have heard that some persons have gone out from us and troubled you with words, unsettling your minds, although we gave them no such instructions. They didn't come from us. We didn't send them. We certainly didn't teach them that they need to go, or we didn't tell them they need to go up there and teach you that you need to become Jews in order to be acceptable and pleasing to God. So the wrong actions are a partnership that we need to avoid or to stay away from. And the wrong motives, certainly. In 3 John, John writes, I have written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority. Dr. Fee's motives weren't what they should have been. John's going to go on in 3 John and say that he will eventually come and do something about that. And so clearly the Bible teaches, the New Testament teaches, that there are some partnerships that are not acceptable for those who are Christians. So what I want us to think about for a few minutes in the lesson this morning is about those partnerships. What exactly is it that Paul is telling the Corinthians? What exactly is it that Paul is telling us when he says, do not be unequally yoked together with an unbeliever? And I want to shoot the elephant in the room first and just get it out of the way. Is Paul teaching here that it is wrong for a Christian to marry a non-Christian? That it's sinful for a Christian to marry a non-Christian? I've heard Christians, I suppose, all of my life contend. I've heard preachers say it in sermons. I've read it in articles. I've heard comments made in Bible classes or teaching done in Bible classes that what Paul is saying here is that it's wrong for a Christian to marry a non-Christian. Is that the point that Paul's making in this text in 2 Corinthians chapter 6? Well, go back to the first letter that Paul wrote, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I'm just going to look at one verse there, verse 10. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, to this same church, to this same group of people, Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 something that he will call the present distress. There's persecution that is ongoing, and Paul will tell them that the persecution is going to get worse. And so Paul teaches them some things about relationships in that chapter, and about the marriage relationship in particular. And what happens, and especially during persecution, during times of persecution, what happens if a Christian is married to a non-Christian? Look what Paul says to them in verse 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 10. For the married I give this charge, not I but the Lord. In other words, Paul is saying, this is not just my opinion, it's not just my judgment, it's not just my recommendation. What I'm about to tell you comes from God. From the Lord, the wife should not separate from her husband. And so even in a situation that Paul refers to as the present distress, Paul says, if you're married to a non-Christian, and that mate, that non-Christian mate is content to stay with you, you have to stay with them. And so why then would Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 teach that it's a sin for a Christian to marry a non-Christian? If that's true, if that's what Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, then he should have said something different in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He should have said you shouldn't be married to a non-Christian to start with, but he doesn't say that. He says stay married. And so I wanted to make that point at the very beginning of the lesson and say this: it may be unwise, as a matter of fact, there are multitudes of reasons why it is unwise for a Christian to marry a non-Christian. It is not necessarily sinful for a Christian to marry an unbeliever. And that's not Paul's primary point in this text. So I wanted to just get that out of the way. Let me also say this, that a good rule maybe of thumb to consider when you're deciding whether or not you're going to marry someone, and by the way, this rule would apply if you're dating a Christian or you're dating someone who's not a Christian. It would apply in both cases, I think. Will this person help me and any children that we might have? Will they help us get to heaven? Is this relationship going to help me honor God and get to heaven? And that question then, I think, will help us to make decisions about choices that we make. The most important choice that I think a person makes, beyond choosing to obey the gospel, is choosing to marry and finding someone to marry, and making the number one priority in finding someone to marry, not what do they look like or how much money do they have. Will they help me get to heaven? So I wanted to get that out of the way first. I'll say more about that here in just a few minutes. But let's go back to the text. What is Paul saying then in 2 Corinthians chapter 6? What's the point of this paragraph? Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Paul uses five synonyms here. And he just stacks them one on top of the other. Whatever he's talking about here is something that is important to Paul. He says, first of all, what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? What partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Paul uses the same word partners. And again, I'm going to quote a couple of verses from Ephesians chapter 5. And you can turn to Ephesians chapter 5, because I'm going to come back there in just a few minutes. But he uses the same word in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 7. He says, therefore, do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Do not become partners with those who walk in darkness. Partners with those who teach error. He uses the same word. What partnership then does righteousness have with lawlessness? If we were in a Bible class, I'd just ask that question and you would say, none. There is no partnership with righteousness. Light and darkness are not compatible. They don't have partnership. What fellowship has light with darkness? This is the word koinonia. Again, none. The answer is none. There is no fellowship with light and darkness. This is the English Standard Translation on the text. You might have words that read a little bit differently than some of these. But what accord has Christ with Belial? Assuming here that Belial is talking about Satan, And some commentators don't agree that it's a direct reference to Satan. But just for the sake of argument, we'll make that point, that he's talking about Satan here. What relationship is there? What accord is there with Christ and Belial? New American Standard Updated Edition translates that word as harmony. Is there any harmony between Christ and Satan? And the Christian Standard Bible and the New Revised Standard Version translate that word as agreement. Is there any agreement at all between Christ and Satan? A single thing on which they agree? Nothing. There's none. Do you see what Paul is doing here? Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. You can't have a partnership with them. You can't have fellowship with them. You can't have accord with them. The fourth synonym, or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? What do we have in common is what the Christian Standard Bible says. What do a believer and an unbeliever have in common? Very little. And I would say even nothing in regard to the things that are really important. Think about that in connection with what we just said about marriage. Is Paul saying it's a sin for a Christian to marry a non-Christian? Not at all. But if you're looking for someone to marry and your primary goal is, I need to find somebody who can help me get to heaven, then I need to find somebody who has that in common with me, that determination to get to heaven. But by the way, that's not a guarantee that it will always be that way, but that's the way we start. I'm not primarily looking for someone who is compatible with me intellectually. For me, that would be almost everybody who would be more intellectual than me. I'm not looking for somebody primarily who is economically compatible with me. We share the same hobbies. We like the same jokes. We like the same recreational activities. We're from the same region. We speak the same language. Those things aren't really ultimately important to the Christian. Do we share faith? Do we share faith? What do I have in common with this person? Maybe even when I think about dating and finding someone to date. What am I looking for? Am I looking for someone who shares the most important things in my life in common with me? He's not finished there. In verse 16, what agreement has the temple of God with idols? What partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? None at all. What fellowship has light with darkness? It doesn't. What accord, what in common does Christ have with Belial? Not a thing. What portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? And the things that matter and the things that are really important, nothing at all. What agreement has the temple of God with idols? Notice that he says, for we are the temple of the living God. He'd made that point in 1 Corinthians, that we are the 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that we are the temple of the living God. And so what relationship is there between the temple of Christ and the temple where idols would be worshipped? Paul does this a lot in his writings. He's very talented at this. He's very skilled at this. He builds tension in his writing. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. He could have just ended it there. He could have just stopped there, but he doesn't. He wants us to understand how vital this is, how important this is. So he uses these five synonyms. What then does it mean, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers? Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5, where again, in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul is making almost, I think, exactly the same argument that he's making here in this text. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11, Paul will say this, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Take no part, some translations say, do not participate in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. What is Paul warning us in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 when he says, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Don't be mismatched with unbelievers. In Ephesians 5, very clearly, the idea of being in partnership with or participating with unbelievers, those who participate in the unfruitful works of darkness, has to do with joining them in the sin. I think that's exactly the point that Paul's making in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. To be unequally yoked has to do with joining an unbeliever in sin. To be in partnership, fellowship, harmony, having in common, agreeing with an unbeliever in that which is sinful. It's not just that I am yoked together with an unbeliever. It is that that yoke has put me in a situation or put me in a position where I am being tempted to engage in sinful behavior. And where the temptation, because of the yoke that exists, because of the relationship that exists, the temptation will be especially strong for me to engage in sinful behavior. Now, what kind of human relationships would that apply to? What kind of human relationships would that apply to? I'm going to answer it just like this. All of them. All of them. Let me use marriage again as an illustration. I said I'd come back to that. I'm dating someone. And I have it in my mind that this is going to go further. But I learn along the way that they don't have the right to be married. That if I marry this person, I will be involved in committing adultery with this person. Jesus talks about that in Matthew chapter 19, does he not? If a man puts away his wife except for sexual immorality, she marries another, she commits sin. The one who marries her commits adultery, commits sin. That marriage partnership might be wrong because it involves me, or it might involve me, in sexual immorality. And so in looking for a Christian, choosing a marriage partner, looking for a marriage partner, I'm going to find someone not only who can help me get to heaven, I'm going to find someone who actually has the right to be married. And my relationship with them is not going to involve me in sin. What kind of relationships would that apply to? It would apply to all relationships. I think a Christian can marry a non-Christian. I'm not convinced that it's wise for a Christian to marry a non-Christian. I could talk about the odds. It occurs to me in 45 years of preaching that very often when this subject is mentioned, that it's not a sin for a Christian to marry a non-Christian necessarily. So somebody will point out that, well, I know a couple who have been married for 40 years or 50 years, and he wasn't a Christian when they got married, or she wasn't a Christian when they got married, and they obeyed the gospel, and they've been faithful and dedicated to God all throughout their lives. And what can we say to that? But amen. Thank God. But what I do know from personal experience is this. You come to me and introduce me to a couple where a Christian married a non-Christian, the person was not a Christian when they obeyed the gospel, and they stayed happily married, he or she became a Christian, remained faithful. You introduce me to that couple, I will introduce you to 10 Christians who married non-Christians who didn't stay faithful, whose marriages didn't work. I mean, we could play that game. The odds are against you. You may beat the odds if you choose to marry a non-Christian. And if you make that choice to marry a non-Christian, God help you to defeat the odds. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be hard. But it's not a sin. Paul didn't say don't be yoked together with unbelievers. He said don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. The problem with marriage is it is the most powerful yoke that exists. So can I be married to an unbeliever? Yes, I can. But can I then join them? Can I allow them to lead me or guide me or tempt me into a situation that involves me in behavior that's not condoned by God? No. Can I run a business with an unbeliever? Can I be in business with an unbeliever? I think that one's a little bit easier. See, when I asked the question, can I be married to a non-believer, I didn't get a lot of audience response. When I just said, can I run a business with an unbeliever, all over the audience, people were, yes, you can. Absolutely you can. Sure you can. But should the choice be forced on me to practice some dishonesty in running that business? That changes the situation, doesn't it? What about engaging in social and recreational activities with people who aren't Christians? Am I free to participate in social activities with those who aren't Christians? Absolutely. Recreational activities with those who aren't Christians? Absolutely. But if and when that participation involves things that are a violation of the law of Christ, I have one choice and one choice only. I've got to get out. Come out from among their midst and be separate, says the Lord, and do not touch what is unclean. It is unequal yoking that the Apostle Paul is warning us about. And why is he warning us about unequal yoking? Because if you are yoked in a relationship with somebody, again, this isn't just friendship. This is talking about a relationship that binds parties together for a common goal. And I'm in that relationship with someone who's not a Christian. And then things begin to happen that are going to tempt me to turn my back on God or turn my back on God's law. Those are the kinds of relationships, Paul says, that Christians can't afford to get into. And it has to be, listen very carefully, because I tried to think, I've been thinking a lot about how I wanted to say this. Every partnership that you enter into from the moment that you become a Christian until the very end has to be approached with this mindset. I will not allow anything about this partnership to separate me from God. I may enter into this marriage, but it needs to be understood. The non-Christian who I am marrying needs to understand before the vows are said, I will never under any circumstances allow you to influence me to turn my back on God or to ignore God. Yes, I will go into this business with you. I will be your partner, but it's understood up front. It's understood at the very beginning. We can write it into the bylaws if you want to, but it's going to be understood. I will never in this business, in this partnership, I will never do anything. I will never allow you to lead me into doing something that compromises my faith or my conviction in God. Because the most important thing, that's the point. That's really one of the major lessons, I think, of the book of 2 Corinthians is that the most important thing is getting to heaven. And if it costs me a relationship to get to heaven, is that too big a price to pay? Is it? If it costs me a job, is that too big a price to pay to get to heaven? Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Let's understand and recognize, brethren, our goal in life, our only goal in life, not just the primary goal, it's really our only goal in life, is serving God and pleasing God and getting to heaven when we die. Stay out of, avoid relationships that will lead you away from God. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, be yoked together with Christ. As a matter of fact, is it a coincidence that Paul uses this expression about yoking? And Jesus has said, yoke yourself. Well, this is the the Kentucky paraphrase, yoke yourself together with me. If you've got to be in a yoke, yoke yourself together with me. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light. We want to be in heaven. Are you yoked together with Christ? Are you in a relationship that's putting you in compromising positions, that's causing you to compromise your faith or your conviction? What decisions are you going to make about those kinds of relationships? If we can help you in any way to respond to God's invitation to be yoked to Christ, to rededicate or recommit yourself to being in a right relationship with Christ, please let us know how we can help you to do that. Come down to one of these front seats right now while we stand and while we sing.